speaker, Harold H.
Good morning, family. My name is Harold, and I'm an addict. And I want to thank the South Potomac Committee, Program Committee, for selecting me to share on this topic. You know, I had a couple of topics to choose from, but illness and recovery touched my heart. It's something I don't like to talk about. It's something that I'm learning how to cope with. But I know if I share my story, there's probably somebody out there just like me.
Yes.
You know, so I had to really get outside of myself on this one. You know, I'm going to talk about a little bit how I got here. I'm one of those addicts who really, really wanted to be unique. And I had a job, kept a pretty good job. And I thought I could just smoke my crack, drink my alcohol, and mind my business. As long as I could dress up my garbage, I always stayed neat. And always paid my father his rent. Y'all made me know that I was homeless, you know. But I'm a fast forward. I was smoking crack 100 miles an hour, drinking a lot of alcohol, and I landed up in jail, Alexandria Jail. And every time I see this lady and I talk about jail, she knows what I'm talking about. She minimized my jail time. Say, you always bring it up jail time, nigga. You ain't do it but spend three days in jail. She know who I'm talking about. But that 6 months in jail was where it began for me. You know, as unique as I thought I was, when I got in jail, I had a beige and green outfit just like everybody else had. And one of the counselors said, you know what, you're going to be a, you know, you think you're intellectual, you think you're this, and you think you're that, you're going to have a hard time with this, you know. But she said, there's nothing unique about you. Look in the mirror, you know. You got a green and beige outfit on just like everybody else, you know. And I was so angry at this lady. I was like, I wanted to shake her, you know. But I was in jail, and I couldn't do nothing but take it. You know, and I was in jail, and these young boys was hitting on the bed cell, and I was saying, man, I got to get out of here, you know. So jail, the particular jail I was in, they had this program called Sober Living, and I got into the Sober Living program, and that was just an escape for me, you know, because I got tired of the noise, and I just wanted somewhere quiet to do my little 6 months. But when I got in that program, they started talking about issues, and I was like, what is going on here? You know, when I got arrested, talking about denial, I was laying on the ground, police officer over top of me, and I'm talking about what is going on. You know, this is how much denial I'm in. I'm laying real dramatic. So I'm laying on the ground, what is really going on? And it's like one of my friends said, you smoking crack and drinking alcohol and you getting arrested. That's what's going on, you know. So that was funny to me then. I mean, now. But in that program, in the Sober Living program, we would sit around in a circle and people were talking about their issues. And I didn't know how to address any of my issues. You know, because I wasn't like y'all, you know. I was like, what the hell am I doing in here? Still in denial, with a green and beige outfit on, you know. So as I started listening to people, it's the first encounter where I got in touch with some feelings was when this guy there was talking about his mother and how he hated his mother. And I started crying, and I wanted to fight this guy because I didn't understand how someone could hate their mother and how my mother was dead. My mother died when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I had no understanding. And so that was my first encounter with accepting someone where they were at, you know. And I started talking about other issues, talking about my lifestyle, my homosexual lifestyle in jail. You know, I was so ashamed of people judging me because of that. You know, I used to talk about early on how I was molested when I was about 10 or 11 years old. But that, you know, the more and more I started doing step work, the more and more I realized that that was just me covering up. You know, because I kept hearing y'all talking about y'all were molested. I wasn't molested. I think I volunteered for that. Matter of fact, I know I did. You know, because at the age of 8 and 9 and 7 and 6, I was playing with doll babies. So I pretty much knew at 11 and 12, you know, what I wanted to do. Even though I was that young, I wanted for a long time to hide behind that molestation because it sounded good and that it gets sympathy from y'all. Okay. But as I worked on myself and realized that wasn't the case, you know, I volunteered for that. Anyway, going on, you know, through jail, there was other issues that was coming up. You know, me accepting me who I was, you know, and not liking me because of the stigma of who I was, you know. And I was so angry at people when I first got out of jail, because while I was in jail, they told me to get a sponsor. And I did that, you know. I was so scared when I got out. The first thing I did, it was a Tuesday, I went to this meeting, and I was so scared. I knew I was going to use again, you know. But I did what my sponsor that I was talking to from jail told me to do. He said, go to a meeting. So I went to this meeting, and in this meeting, people were embracing each other, people were hugging each other, people were loving each other, people were talking about issues, and I was like, man, this is all right. You know, I had no idea how to stay clean. I just did what y'all told me to do. I started doing something I thought I would never do, and that's surrender, because I've been on my own for so long. I was so self-sufficient, so self-reliant, so self-serving that I always thought I had to do everything on my own. You know, so it was hard to let y'all in. But when I started letting y'all in, I realized that it wasn't really that bad. So during this meeting, and it was a Tuesday meeting, I'll never forget it, I got in touch with the First Tradition, you know, addict helping another, you know, without parallel. And these addicts was embracing me. This one addict told me, he said, where's your home group? I said, I don't know what a home group is. What is a home group? You know, he said, well, stick around, you know. He said, what is your number? I'm like, what you mean, what is my number? Well, you know, I'm not giving you my number. You know, and I didn't understand what was happening. But what was happening, this addict was embracing me, and that was something I had been ostracized for so long, I didn't understand, I didn't even know how to accept somebody embracing me, you know. So I kept going, and I kept going to meetings, and I kept going to meetings. And around about my first year, I ran into a friend who was my best friend, and he's no longer with us, his name is Forte. And I watched him, and I admired him. And I didn't know God was already planting a seed. I had no idea God was already planting a seed for the illness I suffered, and that's HIV. And coping with that, I was watching him. And I used to admire this guy because he would go on in spite of. And I said to myself, then. And me and a friend of mine said, man, if that ever happened to me, I would jump over a bridge. In my third year, I went to the doctor. And I had bronchitis. So I went to the doctor, and I had this ring, this circle on my head. And he said, well, let me check this out. Have you ever been checked? Have you ever been checked for HIV? I'm looking at him like, what are you talking about? You know, because I'm still under the unique, you know, principles that's not happening to me. You know, so he checked my blood and took my blood and all that. So I went home and I said, you know, that do what he have to do. A week later, it was on a Friday, January 1994, and it was raining that day, and I took my brother with me because he was in the rooms too, and I said, something that didn't feel right, you know, and I took my brother with me, and the doctor said, you're HIV positive. And when he said that, I looked at him like, you sure? You know, he said, yeah, I'm very sure. You know, and I had my brother. The first thing I did, I was so numb. It felt like an out-of-body experience. It was like I was just a shell just standing there. I didn't know what to do, you know. And I was like, man, I heard about it. I took care of a couple of my friends before I was diagnosed. So God was already planting a seed in my life. I had one friend that I bathed, I fed, I took to the hospital. I talked to him, I did everything. I had another friend that I took care of, and I did the same thing with them. And I was like, man, all this time God was getting me prepared, and I didn't even know it, you know. And I say God because thank God that I found one. Because the feelings I was going through, it was nothing y'all could do for me at that moment, you know. After I left the hospital with my brother, I went home and I got my family together. And I told all of them, I said, this is what's happening. You know, I'm HIV positive and I really don't know what to do. You know, and my father, I know they cried. They didn't cry in front of me. But they went on and did their thing. And I went to Baltimore that night. I went to a meeting in Baltimore that night, and I wasn't even there in the meeting. I was just, you know, I didn't hear nothing. And for like 2 weeks, I was just coming to meetings, and I was numb. Because the feelings I had, I couldn't describe them. But what I knew was I had to keep coming. I heard that in the beginning. I had to keep coming back in spite of whatever I was feeling. So the first feelings I got in touch with was shame. It was like, man, this is one disease you inflict on yourself. You know, you can't, there was no excuses. There was, you know, I wanted to blame it on this person. Maybe I shouldn't have slept with that person. But I created all this. You know, so I had to embrace that. And embracing that wasn't easy. You know, another feeling I got in touch with was, I didn't like myself because this was happening to me. I did not like myself. And I said, man, I got to go through this shit. You know? And there's nothing, you know, you got to deal. I have to deal. You know, there's no running around it. There's no running through it. You know, I just have to deal. I hated doctors. I still hate doctors. I go to the doctor now, you know, and I'm like, shit. You know, what they gonna find out now? You know. Now, I'm gonna tell you, the fear of going to doctors even went deeper for me because I had this real good job. And I'm laughing about it, but the fear was so strong in the beginning that I did not want to go to a doctor. My treatment started off, I went to a holistic doctor and I paid out of my pocket for years. I would go to Baltimore and get my injections, my holistic injections, drink the natural teas, the burdock, the Ingestol, the echinacea, all of that, you know. And that wasn't a bad thing for me then. But the fear of going to a doctor to get my cell count and all that, I didn't want to deal with that because I was so scared that they was going to fire me if they found out that I was HIV positive. And I'm going to tell y'all this, that fear stayed for a long time. You know, a long time. You know, and I was killing myself, really, because of fear. Because I mean, going to the holistic doctor was fine. But there's come a time when you got to know your cell count. You know, you got to know. There's some things you got to know. You know, and so I started going to the doctor, and I started getting a little better with myself. And coming into the meetings, that was another issue, another fear issue. I was like, I used to go into meetings, and I would look around and say, now, I ain't sharing shit about being HIV positive. All you judgmental people in here are talk about me real bad. You know, there's no anonymity, so everybody in Alexandria is going to know about it. You know, and I'm like, shit, where do I go and talk about this shit? You know, and I had to get past that because even though I don't say this anymore, I used to say, y'all, I don't care what y'all say, but I do care what you say. I care what you say, you know, and I trust y'all, you know, even though I know sometimes you're not trustworthy. You know, I still gotta trust you. You know, and this is the only place I can come to let myself go. You know, I can't go to work and say, you know, I'm feeling afraid to go to the doctor, you know, because I may, you know, I can't do that. But I can come in here and tell y'all how afraid I am. Right to this day, you know. Step work, man. Whew. Thank God. Thank God for it, you know. I had no, you know, when I used to try to connect powerlessness with this disease, I had another reality check came. I had power. I had power. I could have wrapped up. I could have not slept with that person. I had power, you know, so this disease that I had, I got to take it all on, you know. I got to. I got to be really realistic about it. You know, I can't blame nobody about it. I wanted to so bad, you know. Recently, I had this knot on the side of my neck. Now, anytime something happened to me, whether it be cold, I don't care if I sneeze. You know, I'm talking about me. I say, oh, shit. Here we go. You know, damn. I said, everybody catch a cold, but not with me. I catch a cold. I'm dead. I got the Paul Burrows I want to talk to, the obituary set up. I've already planted that, you know. And the whole, this is what I go through, you know. And I'm like, damn. But it's all right. Because I can come in here and tell y'all that's exactly what I go through. And I'm not ashamed of it anymore, you know. I went to the doctor about 2 or 3 days ago, got a CAT scan. And as I was getting the CAT scan, I started laughing. Because my buddy, and I always mention his name because I have to, because he planted a seed in me so strong. My buddy Forte, I said, boy, I said, this boy's got a deal now. You know, I don't want to deal with this shit. You know, y'all talking about coping, putting up with, all that shit. I don't want to deal with it, but I need to, you know. I had my father, you know, I think about him so much. Whenever I share, wherever I'm at, my father died in 1999. And he helped me out with this piece of acceptance. My father was from the old school, old school. My father loved me unconditionally. And the man he was resonates in me. You know, I love my father because he stood for something. He didn't have a lot of education, that was cool too, but he had a PhD in principles. And he instilled that in me. You know, I know right from wrong. You know, I'm responsible because of him. I used to watch this man. He used to come in the house. Boy, go to the store and get my, you know, go to give me a money order. I said, Daddy, the bill just came in. He said, boy, go get me a money order. I would go get that money order, but what I didn't realize then that he was instilling in me responsibility. And as a result of him instilling in me responsibility, I'm very responsible today. Very anal about stuff. You know, and that's a good thing, you know. I've been in a relationship,
And that's another piece dealing with this disease. It's a piece that you need, you know. One of the reasons I share about this is because not only for myself, but for people who's not dealing with the disease. If you don't take care of yourself, this disease can happen to you too. You know, if you don't talk to whoever you're dealing with, you got the right to know what's going on with them. You know, you have the right to tell them or ask them what is their status. Not only do you have the right to say, I'm not dealing with you until I see some papers. You have that right. You know, so speaking for myself, when I first found out about this disease, the dating thing was just, whew. You know, one thing I learned early on from Forte that I had to tell people what was going on with me. And my ego, whew, I didn't want to do that shit. You know, but I did. And the first time I did that, I got rejected, which will happen. And when I got rejected, I came back to my sponsor and I said, man, why this shit happened to me? You know, and he said, why not? Why not? Real simple, you know. And rejection is not a comfortable feeling, you know. But that's okay, you know, because the person that I did get rejected by, thank God I did. You know, and that's how I kind of look at it now, because he set up the relationship I have now with my partner of over 11 years. And I have not been outside that relationship in 11 years. And I feel good about that. You know, step work, principles, all that tell me that I don't have to sleep around. Today, I'm getting so comfortable with myself that I know I'm really not that bad of a person. You know, I heard y'all saying that, which is another thing. It's my big outlet. It's tennis. I'm a very good tennis player. And I'm ranked, you know, and that's my outlet. When I'm on a tennis court, you know, I don't think about HIV positive. I don't think about nothing. I just get out there and I play. And I'm real competitive. You know, real competitive. So if you tell me I can't do something, you best believe I'm going to do it. You know, that's why this disease has not hindered me. I'm living the best I've ever lived in spite of this disease. In spite of this disease, I'm living the best I've ever lived. And day by day, the shame of it is diminishing. You know, y'all have helped me so much. And you don't even realize how much you helped me. You know, I like being around people that are not judgmental. Because the saying that y'all always say is, people that judge don't matter, people that matter don't judge. But all y'all matter to me. I need all y'all. I need to be able to come in a room and I need to be able to embrace you exactly where you're at, you know. And I'm just so grateful that I'm a part of this process, Narcotics Anonymous. Last night, I was listening to the speaker and I was so grateful that I was there listening to her, because she said a lot of things that related to me. You know, I couldn't come in here in the beginning talking about, you know, I wanted to gravitate to everybody's story, but I come from a pretty good family. I don't have that story, you know, where I was, you know, abused and that type of thing. But I wanted to gravitate to somebody's story when I first came here because it sounded good. You know, my father and mother did the best they could. The choices I made them. So I got to live with it, you know. Okay. I was getting a little nervous now after I read my mouth for a while. So, tonight, they're honoring people that have passed. And my best friend is a part of that, you know. And I always, always, always think about him all the time. You know, we live together. We cut up together. We cussed each other out. We stopped, you know, the whole nine yards we did together, you know. If I haven't said anything today, one thing I wanted to say to anybody that's not dealing with this disease is that please, 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 please wrap it up. You know, please take care of yourself, because when you are infected with this disease, you affect so many lives around you. You know, my family, when something is going on with me, just like recent, they saw this knot on my neck, they all gathered around. Oh God, you know. And I got upset, you know, but that was the love that they had for me. And I had to accept that love. See, a lot of times I don't know how to accept that as being love. They was gathering around talking about how they're going to try to deal with this. But I went to the doctor and, you know, I'm still waiting for the outcome. But I'm okay right now. You know, there's nothing I can do. I had to give it to God. You know, and one thing I try to do is I try to get outside of myself by helping others. And that's been a big deal for me. You know, and a lot of times when you get outside of yourself helping others, you don't have to tell anybody. You just do it. You know, you just do it. I came the whole time when I was first asked to speak, in my mind, I had all these things I thought I was going to talk about. But ain't nothing I programmed in my mind came out. Because God got control. You know. I wanted to touch back on that issue about being molested. You know. When I said that early on, I used to come in the meetings and tell people that, you know, and I'm sort of repeating myself, but I remember telling people that, and I just wanted to be accepted, you know, and I knew that if I told people who I was, that they wouldn't like me, and I didn't want that, you know. You're talking about illness, coping with illness. I'm coping with myself, you know. I'm a homosexual who's homophobic. You know, there's, now you figure that shit out. There's times when I'm around certain gay men and they act a certain way and I do not want to identify. You know, I don't want to identify with it. The ones that's flaming. I'll be gone. You know, I'll be like, oh shit. You know. But that's me. You know. And my partner, there are times when he say, boy, when you gonna come out that closet? We'd be talking and we'd be riding down the road, his cigarette jacked up like this. Like Cleodora or somebody. Or Cleopatra. And I'm looking at him like, put the cigarette down. Somebody gonna see you, you know. And he don't pay me no mind because he's comfortable in his skin. I'm still a work in progress. You know, I'm still a work in progress. But it's okay, you know. I gotta laugh at myself sometimes.
You know, we were we were walking down the street and he'd be grabbing my hand, boy. Man, get the fuck away from me. So, you know, I got people in my life that just love me just because, you know, and I'm so grateful, so grateful. You know, I talked to my sponsor, he couldn't be here, but I talked to him before I came in here, and I thank God for my sponsor. My sponsor, me and him are like night and day. You know, lifestyles are totally different, but we have one thing in common, we're trying to stay clean. And that's it. You know, I don't ask for a lot. All I ask for is respect. If I treat you decent, that's what I expect. But that doesn't happen all the time because of different belief systems, and that's okay. You know, but as long as I'm respectful to you, that's all that matters to me. You know, and I am very respectful to people. You know, I let people stay in their space, you know, and it's just a blessing, man. And I am so glad this is over with. Because I can sit down and drink me some water and thank God for y'all allowing me to share.
Thank you. Thank you, Harold. And now for our second speaker, we have Richard D.
My name is Richard Dean, and I am an addict. And for those that are curious, let me get it straight. My name is Richard Dean. Like Geraldine, I'm Richard Dean. Let me go a little further. My father's name was Richard. It took my mother and father 10 years to have the first child, and I got it. I have been explaining that over 50 years, and it's okay. It's okay today, because it wasn't okay when I was growing up. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope on coping with illness and recovery, and in my sharing, I'm going to talk a little bit about me, how I got to the point where I am now. Because I deal with a couple of illnesses, a couple of them, you know. And I'm going to just touch a little bit on them and how I'm dealing with them. But growing up, I grew up in a wonderful household. My mother cooked. I learned how to cook. You know, I learned how to bake, you know. And that's what we did. That's how you made people happy. You know, and growing up, that's how I was taught to keep your man at home. You cook. You keep them coming back to the table. Ain't that right, Tony? So anyway, the cooking part, you know, with the different, you know, especially the bacon, and with the history of my family. My mother is a diabetic, and my mother used to tell me stuff like, girl, you need to change your diet, you need to stop this, you need to stop that. And of course, like the other things that she used to tell me, I said, Mama, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, and I kept on and I kept on, and as time passed and age snuck up, you know, I developed diabetes. Time passed, and I'm going to tell you, in the beginning, when I started feeling things, let me talk about this first. Let me go back. When I first came into recovery, I went through detox, and they sent me to aftercare. And in aftercare, what they taught me was how to identify feelings that I was going through, that everything that I was feeling wasn't always about I was ill. You know, it could be that, you know, my stomach turned and everything. I might just have to go to the bathroom, you know, and stuff like that. So, and that was good for me. So as time went on, and I'm going to tell you, recovery, it was so wonderful for me. I mean, I got clean, and it was just what you said, a new way of life. New way of life. I was sparkling. I was shining. And I'm telling you, I was on the pink cloud. It wasn't pink, it was red. And everything was wonderful because when I got here, I bought the whole package. I bought the sponsor, I bought the network, I bought service, I bought getting into the steps, I bought the dances, I bought it all. It was all good for me. I wasn't bucking. I came in here like the little girl that I was and still can be, and I got some folks, and I start tagging along behind them and doing just what they was doing. They wasn't telling me what to do. I was doing what they was doing because that's what they told me in detox. They said, if you want what we have, you've got to do what we're doing. So anyway, as I continued through my process, I started having feelings. You know, I kept being lightheaded, you know, and I kept having this ringing in my ears, and I know I wasn't shooting no cane, so it wasn't that. So I go to this doctor, and I had this doctor that I was trying to stay with, you know, because I hate doctors also. I hate getting my blood drawn. I hate that. So I found a doctor that had a lady that worked in her office that could get me the first time. And I was not going to leave his office. I don't care if I had to sit there for 3 hours for an appointment. I just fear, because fear keep me stuck. That's me. I don't know about y'all. Even in active addiction, fear kept me there. So with the fear part, I stayed with this doctor. So I told him one day, I said, you know what? I need something checked. Something's not right. And he just passed right over it. So I was told by one of you that the next time I get my blood drawn, not to eat and ask for a fasting blood sugar. And sure enough, I turned up borderline diabetic. So as time went on, you know, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do with the medication, but not with the eating. Because, see, I was one of the ones, yeah, okay, I can eat, just take my medicine, that's all. So as time went on, I developed high blood pressure as a result of not addressing the issues, you know, because a diabetic, you prone too to high blood pressure. So I continue on and on in my process. I'm taking my medication. I'm starting to exercise, and I'm talking about coping with my illnesses. And I'm not doing what, you know, I ain't being consistent, you know, and I ain't going to sit here and lie to you because I still am not consistent because I come down to Ocean City. I did real well for about a month, two at home. You know, we eat real good. But I planned it for Ocean City. I baked that chocolate cake. I got me a French apple pie and we stopped at Dipsy's and got some ice cream. You know, and I'll work on it when I get back home. And see, that's the addict. That's the addict, because for me, sugar is a drug. I get one little bit of sugar, and I'm gone. You know, I got to come back. You know, I got to reel myself back in with that, you know. So time goes on, you know, and I developed a high cholesterol. So I'm dealing with all this. I'm taking a lot of medication, and I'm telling you, taking all the pills for me had gotten to be a challenge. Because my memory is not what it used to be. And I would get to the evening and forget if I took my medicine. So what I did, one of y'all told me to get me one of the little pill bottles, AM, PM, 7 days a week. It's big as hell, but that's what I do. But I'm going to tell you what was real embarrassing for me. My husband and I went on a cruise not too long ago, and we got to the breakfast table. You know how they sit you with everybody. So I pull out my pills, And it was a nice little old Southern lady sitting over there. She said, oh, my God, my sister take all them pills, too. I didn't say anything. I wanted to smack her, you know, but I didn't say anything, you know. But that was embarrassing, you know, and, I don't know, you know, because I look at myself as being a healthy woman. You know, and I'm looking at the outside. I'm a healthy woman. You know, because even during my addiction, I didn't deal with anything, for real, other than gonorrhea. You know, when I did have a positive reaction to a tuberculin skin test, but them people at the methadone clinic gave me that. You can't tell me they didn't. You know, I didn't have nothing to do with that. I ain't been nowhere to get that. So, anyway... time goes on. I'm the one, like I said, I'll keep let fear keep me stuck because I'm afraid of feeling anything but good. I do not want to feel pain or anything, so I won't address that kind of stuff. And I'll just let it kill me. You know, so I'm coming in and I believe in the program of Narcotic Anonymous. I come to the meetings and I look at the meetings as a place to learn how to live. So when I come in and I hear you share, if it's something that I ain't really wanting to deal with, I'll be in my head talking about they need to shut up. And I know none of y'all do that. You know, but you're stepping on my toes and I'm like a sweat and I'm uncomfortable. You know, but I keep coming and I keep listening. But I'm also watching after you share, I'm watching you. I'm watching how you deal with what you're going through. And what eventually happens for me is I get some faith that I can too do what you're doing. Just like in detox, when I saw that girl come up in there and I was like, when she shared and I found out who she was, I said, well, maybe this is possible for me. And it's the same thing. I found out, and I always suspected, that I had Hep C. So my doctor, matter of fact, I had to ask my doctor for that test. You know, because see, with HMOs, they ain't going to test you. You don't want to pay for nothing. So I asked them for the test. And after I got the results, my doctor sent me to a gastrologist, hepatologist, and, you know, they did all the series that they do before, all of that. And so the doctor wanted me to get on the treatment. And I'm like, I know. He wanted me to take a biopsy. I said, absolutely not. You know, sticking me? No, 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 no. And so I went on with that for about 3 years. No, my doctors checked my levels, and they just kept me up with the levels and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I'm just playing, you know, because that's all I was doing. So after a while, my primary, she said that my levels were changing. And I'm talking about not the levels of the virus, but the levels in my liver. So she started talking to me also. So I had watched some women, because see, I look at the men, but I watch women. I watch women and what they go through. You know what I'm saying? Because I can identify, not that I can't identify with the men, but I'm talking about me, you know. And I thank God for sponsorship. Let me say that. I thank God for sponsorship. And I'm not the one, because see, I still think I know 2-3 things, and sometimes I think I know more than the people that have been here before me. You know, but when it comes to the experiences of what people go through with life, I have to look at that, you know. So I watched my sponsor. I watched some other women. that had gone through the treatment. And I watched some men go through transplant and things like that. And I've always been encouraged. And I've had some people, too, that have had no doctor going to school for being a doctor, nothing telling me that I didn't need it. What I do is I share my experience, my strength, and my hope. I was told not to give advice, and I don't. So with me watching people, I went on and I took the biopsy. But before that, I'm going to tell you, I didn't go in there, for come on with it. I had to call the hospital and talk to the technician, and I had to find out exactly what they were going to do. I had to make sure that I was going to get put to sleep because I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't. And I told the lady once I got there, I said, if you don't put me to sleep, I'm jumping right up off this table. And I was, you know. But it wasn't all that I made it to be, you know. And I got through that. And I'm going to tell you, every time I go through something, I feel so much better about me. Because what's happening for me is I'm growing up. That's what I'm doing. I'm growing up and I'm facing life, you know. So once I got my biopsy and the doctor talked to me, told me what stage and this, that, and the other. And so he said, we're going to start the treatment. So, you know, I had to set it off, make it the right time and all that. I said, after Thanksgiving. You know, and he was fine with that, you know, because I went to see my mother. I traveled to see my mother. And, of course, I had to eat because I had it all set up in my mind. It was going to be this way. It was going to be that way. But what I did was I'm continuing to talk to people. I'm continuing to be encouraged. You know, and you all do that for me. You pump me up to let me know that I can do anything that I want to do, and I don't have to do it by myself. And that's, for me, is the thing, that I don't have to do it by myself, you know. So the treatment for me has not been uneventful, okay, and I'll say that. But the treatment for me has not been devastating. It has not been devastating. I have been able to continue with all of the things that I do, but maybe not to the extent that I have done it. And I'm talking about dancing, okay, because that's what I do. I dance for my relaxation, you know, and I have not been able to dance the way that I normally do because I don't want to. I don't feel like it, you know, but I still cook. Yeah, I still cook. And I eat. I maybe have lost 3 pounds. But I follow the directions. Everybody tells me water. And I follow directions, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't do that a long time ago. I have had bouts of anemia and white blood cell count decreasing. And therefore, I've had to take 2 other medications twice a week by injection. And it's, you know, it's not been all that. It's just having to remember which one to take what day, you know. So I was having all of these dark days. I don't know if you all know what I mean, but dark days. And so I talked to my doctor, you know, because I would come home, my husband, he is a wonderful guy, you know. And I come home, and him and the dogs would come out the basement. They'd look at me, and he said, come on, y'all. They gone back down the basement, you know. You know, but I just felt like, you know, I can't even explain it, you know. But I talked to my doctor because somebody told me to talk to my doctor. Because I was going to handle it, because that's who I am. I can handle it, rough and tough. You know, I ain't got to go to the doctor. I can handle this. So what the doctor did was he decreased the other medication that I'm on instead of giving me whatever it is that they take for depression. So I felt better. I feel better. But I still have dark, not as dark days. So I got a call 8 o'clock Friday, no, 8 o'clock, when did we leave? Thursday morning. And it was my doctor. So he had to increase the medication again because of white blood cell count. You know, and I wanted to get all up in my head that, you know, and, you know, just get upset. But you all have taught me that I just need to go through. Just do it. And that's what my grand sponsor said one day after I had shared, and he shared. He said, just do it. Just do it. You know, but I'm not going to tell you that I'm not reluctant in continuing. I am so looking forward to stomping. I just want to think I'm normal, you know. But I do understand that the illnesses that I have, I will be dealing with this for the rest of my life, you know. And I just need to continue in my process of applying the steps to my life, because that's how I get the deal, you know, through what I have learned in step work. You know, I always have to address and continually address the character defect of fear, you know, because it will continue to have me stuck. Because, see, I know this ain't all. Because if I live long enough, I'm going to have some other stuff, you know. And but what I'll do is I'll continue to keep watching y'all and being encouraged by everyone. You know, because when I go to meetings and I think I got it bad and somebody else share, I'm like, girl, you blessed. But I'm blessed anyway. You know what I'm saying? Every morning that I am allowed to put my feet on the floor and take a breath, I'm blessed. And the rest of this stuff will come if that's what's supposed to happen. I will encourage everyone to be proactive in your health care. Listen, watch. And I'm going to thank you all for letting me share.